You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out this week. Coming up, it's World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. We'll talk about the challenges facing the senior citizen population. First, as investigations into the mass shooting at an LGBT nightclub in Orlando continue today, fingers are being pointed in various directions, homophobia, gun control, American foreign policy, and religious extremism, to name a few. But our next guest says that while violence like this isn't entirely new to America, it has taken on a unique form in the 21st century. Jeremy Suri joins us now. He's the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs and a Professor of History and Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. And he wrote about the Orlando attack for the American Statesman. Jeremy, welcome back.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, you say that terrorism goes back to the 19th century, but what is different about the kind of attack that we saw this weekend in Orlando and maybe in other cases?
Well, I think we're seeing two relatively new phenomena in the long history of terrorism. One, the most obvious, is that we now have small numbers of individuals who are able to kill very, very large numbers of victims, which is to say the killing power of an individual like the shooter in Orlando is much greater than his terrorist counterparts 100 years ago. And second, in the United States at least, we're seeing these incidents far more frequently. In fact, they're so frequent now that they've almost become normalized. There's a multi-person shooting every day in the United States. They're as frequent as car accidents in some respects.
So what has changed to bring about that frequency and also the change in one person killing a big number of people?
Well, I think there are a number of things we'd have to point to. There's no one explanation. There have always been a lot of guns in the United States. We have had a gun culture since our founding, but the technology of guns and the prevalence of them has definitely increased in the last 20 years, particularly in the last 10 years. I think it's safe to say that the technology for semi-automatic rifles, which allows someone like this shooter to carry around a rifle that can, I think, shoot 13 bullets a second, that is new, so that raises the level of killing. And certainly since we've had an African-American president, we have seen an absolute rise very quickly in more and more people buying guns. So even in a society that already had a gun culture, we're now seeing more deadly guns in the hands of more people, and that's definitely a part of the story.
What's the connection? You said it since we had an African-American president.
Well, I think there's been a lot of rhetoric. This is a point I tried to make in a couple of op-eds I've written. We've had a combative, violent political debate for at least 10 years. It's not just about the last 10 years, but as our politics have become more violent, as they become winner-take-all, as they become more nasty, that encourages people to do violent things and to prepare for violence. And so I think our politics are in part responsible for the ways people are misusing guns today.
Now, in your piece, you say that it's culture here and also the sort of civic discourse that you're pointing at, but that American public culture glorifies violence. Where do you see that at different levels?
Well, this is also an old story, but I think, again, it's gotten worse. It's long been the case that people have been fascinated with violence. You can go back to the 18th century and people, you know, crowding around the guillotine. There's a fascination that Freud talks about that we, unfortunately, as human beings, have with violence. And the media has played to that, certainly, since the beginning of the television and movie ages. But there's certainly more of it today. It's hard not to go to your Twitter feed or your Facebook feed or whatever it is you look at and see violence around you all the time. It's as if we are inundated with violence and pornography. And I'm a father of young children, and I've just seen how hard it is and how hard it gets, much harder it gets every year to keep them away from this stuff. And so that's part of it. It's always been there, but I think the scale of it and the pervasiveness of it has crossed a line.
So in that crossing of a line, what happens? Is it the sort of tipping point that we hear about where at a certain point it's not something that's benign or counterbalanced, that it's something that really affects us in our day-to-day lives?
Right. I think, first of all, it's become normalized. It's become acceptable to say violent things to people, to threaten to harm people in debate. It's become acceptable to use violence. It's become acceptable in some places to do violence to people and get incredibly small punishment for it. So it's been normalized and it's become acceptable. That's one problem. Secondly, it's become a badge of honor. It's become a way of showing you're tough. It's become a way of showing you're a leader. I sometimes worry that young men in particular are getting the image that to be a leader, they've got to go beat someone up. It's not just that it's normalized, it's actually being valorized and glorified. I mean, think of the ways in which people have have come to follow Trump because of his tough guy, bad boy, violent behavior and violent words. That's a real problem.
We're talking with Jeremy Suri right now from the University of Texas, Austin, talking about the different strands that he says contributed to the attack in Orlando, things going on in our culture and our politics, and what might change, what might need to change. And one thing, Jeremy, you're noticing and hoping for a change in is the conversation we have that people are kind of getting this echo chamber kind of effect, only talking to people who agree with them, and you'd like to see a culture and a politics that tolerates diverse points of view and understands compromise.
I think that's right, and that encourages people, and this is what we haven't taught a generation of people, and what I hope we're trying to teach them in universities and places now, is that they have to learn to be around and talk with people who see the world differently, and not just listen, but be willing to work with them, not shut themselves off. We have become a world of ghettos in our communication, in the way we live, in the ways we go to school. And I'm sorry, when people like the governor of Wisconsin attack the University of Wisconsin, they're attacking that. I think what he doesn't like is that there are viewpoints at the university that are different from his. And that's exactly what a university should be. We need a world where we're accepting and encouraging of different viewpoints. The alternative is a world of violence where we try to kill people of different viewpoints, or we say things like they shouldn't come in our country, or we should build walls to keep them out. Those are violent, provoking statements.
You're talking a lot about the extreme language that gets used, sometimes the black and white thinking. You can point to that. We are living in an age where the challenges do seem dire. Terrorist strikes seem dire, and it seems as though that lends itself to that kind of thinking. Do you think that that's part of the time that, you know, basically that we live in, that it might require?
Well, yes, to some extent. I mean, we live in a world where there are some real threats. As you know, Veronica, we've talked about it on your show. I believe there's clear evidence that there are real terrorists out there, and that there are people trying to do harm to us. But the problem is we're conflating things that shouldn't be conflated. There were 10,000 gun deaths in the United States last year. Of those 10,000 gun deaths, 9,800 or so of them could not in any possible way be connected to anything that has anything to do with terrorism. And the other 200, even there, the causal links are very minimal. So what we're seeing in violence in our society is not about foreign terrorism. It's about domestic problems. That doesn't mean we shouldn't do things to try to protect ourselves against foreign terrorists. But we have to ask ourselves if the things we're doing are actually making it worse. When we say anti-Muslim things, when we encourage violence, when we encourage tribalism, we give ammunition to these terrorist groups that are trying to recruit. The best protection for us is to be an open, inclusive society where people who are not happy with their lives feel they have a chance to get ahead and don't feel they have to destroy people as a consequence.
So that's where you want to get to. Where you are, the X marks the spot where we are right now, is a ways off from there. So how do you bridge that?
Well, that's the biggest question of all. I've tried to point to some suggestions, but my suggestions are puny in comparison to what we need to do. But I'll just lay out a few of them. One, I think, first of all, we need to demand political leaders who speak to these issues in the way you and I are talking about them right now. We cannot accept politicians who use hatred and violence to rally groups and play to our fears. That's offensive, and that's making things worse. And that has to start in our presidential election right now. Second, all of us citizens have an obligation to go out and mentor and educate young people in what we're talking about. We need to talk about this. We can't expect someone else to do it. Too many of us complain and kvetch and then just go on with our lives. We need to make a point, all of us as individuals. This has to be public service we all care about. And we need to fund and support institutions like universities that do this. This is the dream of American higher education, the dream of American public education. If we privatize education, we prevent this from happening. So those are three things we can do, but I don't want to pretend those will solve the problem. Those are at least some steps that I think could help, but there's a lot more we need to do.
And we leave it there. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Veronica.
That was Jeremy Suri. He's the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs and a Professor of History and Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin.